So is the recorder on, starting, or do I need to press it?
It's on.
It's on, okay. So we'll start with short sitting, and then I'll give an overview talk for the whole retreat. And so, how many of us have a regular mindfulness or insight practice? And how many people are very new to mindfulness practice? And how many people have never done mindfulness practice before? Okay, so a few, okay. So I'll give some very simple instructions now. We'll just sit for about 10 minutes. And then we'll have more detailed instructions. I think we're gonna do maybe a little bit after this evening, and then more tomorrow morning after breakfast. So initially, just come to be in the present moment. Again, those of us with regular practice know what to do. For those who are newer, can be helpful just to come back to being with your body. For some of us, it can be helpful to be with the breath. So you might just be aware of your body, be present. And when the mind wanders, just come back. And we'll give more refined instructions, especially tomorrow morning. But for now, it's just to keep coming back to being present and find some way that helps you to be present, especially a sense of just being with your body. You can feel, for example, just the hands touching or the hands on the knees, something like that, if you're newer. Maybe the sounds. Be with that, and when the mind wanders, just come back. Keep coming back. If the mind goes to past or future, just keep coming back. And so this is a simple way of beginning our training. So again, it is a pleasure to be with everyone and to practice and train together. We're really training on this retreat to develop more wisdom, to purify what we call our hearts, to express more kindness and compassion and joy. And we bring those together then. We bring together the wisdom, the clear seeing, and the kind heart. And we train together to do this. And I think as Yehel was saying, this can bring out a sense of being in touch with what is most meaningful to us in our lives. We get away from the busyness. And we say, how do I want to live my life? What do I want to develop? You know, we have to, each of us, come to terms with the need for livelihood and work and requirements of family. And here we can train, and the possibility is that we can touch some very, very deep aspirations, or maybe we call them even longings, to live a life that is dedicated to wisdom and to love and to helping others, and to refine that that aspiration. And sometimes to touch it, and to, each of us will have a little different language, you know. Some people will, it won't be like I just said, it'll be like to find what my true vocation is, the true purpose of my life. Maybe it's that. Maybe for others it's just to have fun in a deep way. That's pretty good. So each of us will explore. There's this beautiful way that we give a lot of room just to see how each of our awakenings appear, and they're different. And it's very good to talk with each other, compare, oh, this is how I see it, this is what is opening up for me. But it's such a privilege to be in our roles, because we get to, I like to think, very much like Yehel said, that we get to be with each other and maybe with ourselves, where we have the most integrity and honesty and maybe depth and truth. And then we train here at the retreat, and then we have the sometimes challenging task of bringing it back to our daily lives. We're not going to think about that too much right now. We bring in that at the end, you know. And so one of the very traditional ways that the training is understood is in terms of developing wisdom and what we might call the kind heart. Sometimes it comes under the label of compassion. So it's said sometimes that the teachings are like a bird that has two wings. Probably some of you know this image. It has two wings, and the wings are those of wisdom and compassion. You might say the clarity of seeing, and then the opening of the heart. And I like in the Vietnamese traditions, they also said that the bird has a body, and that the body is connected actually for them with courage. Interesting. So there's a way that we awaken the clarity of seeing, we awaken the heart, and we awaken the body as well. So we'll be training in each of those areas and also looking at the integration of these areas. And some of us may have experienced retreats or a practice where the emphasis is on mindfulness. It's very valuable. But sometimes we emphasize mindfulness or even insight or wisdom without bringing in the awakening of the heart. I know where I teach at Spirit Rock, probably 90% of our retreats are mostly mindfulness and insight retreats. And there's some bringing in of maybe loving kindness, but it's not emphasized as much. The emphasis is a little bit more on mindfulness and wisdom. And we'll be more in this retreat emphasizing the awakened heart. So we'll start the retreat with an emphasis tomorrow particularly on cultivating mindfulness and stability of mind, more concentration. And that'll be our emphasis tomorrow. The entire day we'll be training in that way, again familiar to many or most of us. And on that basis then, we'll start on Tuesday with what we call the heart practices. Loving kindness or metta, compassion, joy, sometimes called sympathetic joy, joy in the joy of others, and then equanimity, which means a kind of a balance. And I'll talk about each of these just briefly. And we'll go into more depth on each of them in the next 5 days, 5-6 days. But we'll be continually looking for that connection of the mindfulness, the development of wisdom, and the awakening of the heart. That'll be the continual theme. And tomorrow again, a little more emphasis on mindfulness and wisdom, and then we'll bring in on successive days, loving kindness, then the next day compassion, next day joy, next day equanimity, but we'll also keep the earlier practices going. It's not like, okay, finished loving kindness, no more. Just compassion, no. Because what we'll see is that they're closely related. We like to think sometimes that actually there's just one awakened heart, but it looks different dependent on conditions. So we sometimes say that this basic friendliness, and the word in the original language is metta, and translated in English as loving kindness, maybe like one century ago in England by Victorians, and so for mindfulness, same thing, you know, I don't like translation so much, but they had good intentions, and so the meaning in the original language is more like a basic friendliness, basically approaching everyone and maybe even every situation with a basic warmth, kindness, friendliness. And that is like the general approach that we might have when nothing so much is happening, you know, just nothing too good or bad. And we have this basic friendliness. And we could call that one form of the awakened heart. And then when that awakened heart meets difficulties or pain or suffering, it naturally becomes compassion. We talk about compassion as the quivering of the heart when there is pain or suffering or very difficult things. It's the same heart, but it takes a different form, really meets what is happening. And in a similar way, mudita, which is in English translated as sympathetic joy, because in the tradition, it was often meant joy and the joy of others. And this appears when we notice that someone is doing well, or someone is happy, or something good happens to someone. And then it's very natural when the heart is awakened to almost like a musical instrument to resonate. Oh, that person's happy. Oh, I feel happy too. Right, and that's another expression of the awakened heart. When there's a lot of happiness that we're experiencing, then this quality of mudita appears. And Dalai Lama once said, when you really are developing mudita, there are a lot of beings out there who can be happy. And when you're open to mudita, you increase your chances for happiness by 8 billion. And that's just for human beings, not including dogs and cats and giraffes and spiders. Can you tell when a spider is really happy? Maybe we will explore that. Yeah, so, and then the last expression is that of equanimity. And that's an unusual word in English. In English, we don't use that word very much. And so it really means a kind of balance with whatever is happening. Be difficult, I can be balanced. And part of our training in mindfulness and the awakened heart, we train in a way so we get more familiar with everything. And we can be more balanced. It's like a mountain climber gets very familiar with fear. Fear is present. Mountain climber can still be balanced, right? Still afraid, but it doesn't make the mountain climber unable to function. And so this equanimity, or upekkha, is a kind of balance, and we would say non-reactivity. And it's a deep quality, so we'll be exploring that near the end. Actually, I don't know if you know, but in the Tibetan tradition, they always start with equanimity. Yeah, because equanimity brings in a little bit more of the wisdom factor. They say, gotta start with wisdom. But we're starting with wisdom in another way. So, now, with our mindfulness practice, we develop more the ability to be present, to be less distracted, and to see more clearly whatever is occurring. And so usually we start our practice actually more with what we might call a concentration practice, where we develop more stability of mind, where we are less distracted. And that's crucial, especially in contemporary societies, where it's almost distraction maybe is the normal state, would you say? Close. And a lot of people make a lot of money by keeping us distracted, right? I think you know that they even, you know, the people who design cell phones, right? They are committed for us to be distracted. Do you know that research? It's interesting. They actually show that the design of some of the technology, a lot of the electronics, is designed so that people will be, you know, addicted, more or less. And they'll want to, gotta check that, gotta do that, let's do that. And of course there's use there, but there also is a kind of distraction. And so what we do here is we simplify our life. We simplify our life here, and we let go of electronics. You know, the addictive tendencies are still there. Anyone notice so far? Anyone notice? Oh, I forgot to do this. So So we first gain more steadiness. And we do that in that simple way. Again, we'll have more detail tomorrow of focusing on one area of experience. Sometimes it's the breath, very often it's the breath, but it could be sound or some sensations with the body. And it could be something else. Some people learn to concentrate maybe by focusing on a mantra or staring at a flame. You know, there are many techniques. Some people do it with the eyes open, and you can do it any different way. You could just look at a piece of paper. Every time the mind wanders, you come back. So it's done in different ways. Very common is to focus on the breath. When the mind wanders, you come back. And in doing that, you develop more stability, but you also start to see, oh, here are my 10 main ways that I am distracted, right? Or here are the 10 main things on my mind. And you get to see those. And then when you stay with it long enough, you also start to have different experiences occur, and you get to sit with and be mindful of body sensations, but also maybe irritation, or anxiety, or joy, or pleasant experience of food, right? So we'll talk about that maybe for the meals tomorrow, but we can have very, very good mindfulness practice with meals, especially of pleasant sensations, but maybe not always. I don't know, does the kitchen sometimes make unpleasant food? Just for, I don't know, I don't think so. Where I am at Spirit Rock, many teachers think it's too pleasant. We have discussions about this. So we gain the stability, and then we look and we see more clearly. And the traditional teachings are that we don't see clearly. You know, the metaphor from the Buddha is that of awakening. So what does that mean? We want to awaken. What does that mean? What was happening before we awoke? It means we were asleep in a way, right? It's a fairly radical image, right? It means that we go about our lives in a kind of a trance. That's not so good for self-esteem to hear that. That's a joke. But that's really the teaching, is that we don't see clearly. And we can see this partly in terms of distraction. And so the wisdom teachings are especially to learn to see clearly. And when we talk about insight meditation, there are many kinds of insights. We can have personal insights. We can see our patterns and so forth. But in the tradition, the insights that are most connected with wisdom come in three areas. They come in the area of seeing how things change, seeing how things are impermanent. There was a great Tibetan teacher named the Karmapa, 16th Karmapa, who went to the US Congress. And they didn't have that much time to talk to him. They had better things to do. I think I will not comment further. So they asked him, what is the essence of Buddhism? And he said, everything changes. That was it, right? So, the sea and its, of course, impermanence is very ordinary experience. We know intellectually that everything changes, but the training is to notice that more and more, moment to moment. And everything changes, that includes us. Everything arises, everything passes away, including us. And so the teachings are to see that more and more clearly. That's the first area. The second area is to be able to see really the roots of suffering. This is a teaching, the original language, this is dukkha. I like to translate that as reactivity. It's for kind of resistance to present moment experience. And it usually comes in the form of compulsively pushing away experience, but also grabbing hold of experience. Compulsively, typically unconsciously. And so we look at that. We look at that here. We look at that in our practice. And when we can look more carefully at that, it's one of the areas which is so valuable in daily life. Because we get to see our patterns. And so we look at that quite closely. And many of us who've been practicing have done that a lot. And then the last one is probably the most mysterious. It's called not self. And I won't go so much into it now, but it's that we really look into the nature of the self, and we see that what we call our self is a little bit more like a natural process, and that we're actually more connected than we think. We're not as independent and separate as we think, and that we really have these strong senses of self, a lot of which is very socially conditioned. And when we meditate, we often have the capacity to experience more and more without much sense of self. In a very simple way, that means we can see the sunset without a lot of thinking, just very directly, or we can be with the food very directly. Or we can, in our mindfulness practice, just be with the flow of experience, almost like a naturalist or a kind of a scientist, just observing the flow of experience. You know, oh, there's a thought. Oh, there's a sensation. Oh, there's another thought. Oh, there's an emotion. There's sadness coming through. And can I be with the sadness? And we just notice how it is. And we may not have much, and we learn to not have much sense of self there. We'll maybe say more about that. It's one of the most mysterious teachings. But that's what we cultivate in wisdom. And these are taking to be freeing, liberating, when we cultivate these insights. And that would be the cultivation of wisdom. In our culture, I think culture here in Israel has a lot of similarities to the US. And I would say that in many ways, we don't have so much of the wisdom traditions. And that's, there are challenges. You know, for one thing, I think the qualities of wisdom that have been there maybe in Jewish tradition or Western traditions sometimes have been lost. You know, I know I was a student for a long time of Western philosophy and then Buddhist philosophy. And I was part of a project once called Revisioning Philosophy, which was the idea that the whole philosophy means love of wisdom. And the sense was that the tradition in the past really focused on wisdom, and in the 20th century it was lost. So we were trying to bring that back. And we could say that the wisdom dimension is sometimes not very clear in the larger culture. Where is the wisdom? I would like to have leaders who have wisdom. Okay, I will stop there. Sometimes a little bit of commentary will come through. Okay. But and then there are other ways in which, in much of culture, we have a disconnection between the mind and the heart. Sometimes it's that we're very intellectual and we don't develop the heart. That was my conditioning, and partly related to being a man, right? And still, I think there are still many gender dimensions of this, where we Men sometimes more trained to be intellectual. A lot is changing. And women may be more trained to help others. You know, even now we were on the ride, we were talking about how in education in Israel, most of the teachers are women, right? And the US the same way, most nurses are women. Most psychotherapists are women in the US, I don't know how it is here. But there can be the, even for both, there can, men, women, or other genders as well, it can be a disconnection between the mind and the heart. I think that's strong in our culture. Does that make sense to you? You know, where we don't connect the thinking with opening the heart. And we can see that in a number of different ways. And so what we're doing here is we're making those connections. We're making the connections between wisdom and awakening the heart. And, you know, it'll be different for each of us, really. You know, some of us, maybe, I know for me, like in my own conditioning, I was basically, as a young man, you know, in my early 20s, I was thinking all the time. I was a student, and my thought was, that's what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm thinking all the time. And I remember once I was just walking, and I said, I'm thinking all the time. I'm just like consciousness on a pole. You know, it was like no awareness of my body. And how many can relate to that in terms of your past? Yeah. Yeah, and this was even because I was a competitive athlete. You know, I was a competitive swimmer for 10 years, so very physical, but not aware of my body. Right? And so we have this ways that we often disconnect the mind and the body and the heart, and we're trying to bring those together. So for me, practicing loving kindness in other ways was one of the ways that I came back to my heart. I knew, always knew I had a good heart because I would cry during movies sometimes. I knew that was okay. And so it'll be different for each of us. We'll find our own patterns. We'll find some of us, oh, I can do the mindfulness very well, but the heart practice, that's harder, right? And that's okay. The main thing for all of this is just stay with it. And even when, you know, a retreat is good, people who are newer, just to know, just stay with the practice and bring your questions to us. And when you stay with it, these are very beautiful methods. They've been used for thousands of years. They work. We just have to stay with it. And it's one of the beautiful things being in a group like this. Because if you were just on your own at home, okay, I'm going to develop wisdom and the awakened heart for these next 6 days. Okay, I'm just do that on my own. And I'll follow this schedule. And it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I don't feel like it. Maybe a video game. Right. But we're here and you see other people and they're walking and they come and say, oh, okay, maybe I'll come. Right? And so that's the Sangha, that's the community that supports us. So mostly just stay with it. And especially, even if you're very experienced, the first day or two can be harder. I think, how many of you know that from past experience? Yeah, so just have patience, keep staying with it, watch out for any ideas that make conclusions. No conclusions the next day or two, okay? Just stay with it. So, I have all these notes, I did not look at them at all. I think that's okay. And so, it's a very beautiful practice to have the opportunity. We don't have very many retreats at Spirit Rock where we develop all four of the heart qualities. We usually focus on loving kindness. And so to develop all four, I think it's, is it more common here, would you say? Not so common. This is not a common retreat, just to know that, to develop all four of these, and you can bring them home. And so we'll we'll at the end we'll talk about how to bring things home. But here, think of this as a training, and it's a beautiful one. Good. So, right now we have then walking meditation. You'll get the instructions. Okay.
Oops, I hope I didn't turn it off. Check that as well.
Oops. It takes the whole team to do this.
אז אני חושבת שאתה עדיין יכול להיות. נכתה. מה נפלא?